The following is a questions and answers session given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 26th, 2009, in Govinda Valley, Australia.
Yeah.
If you're married and you don't want to have any more children, should you be celibate?
Yes. Brahmachari tapasa brahmachari na shamena chajakena ja. Yes, brahmachari life is very good. Celibacy is very, very good. If the man withholds his semina, that semina will travel up to the brain and nourish one's intelligence. It gives longevity, it gives resistance against disease. And for someone who unnecessarily passed semina, they become subject to untimely death, they become subject to disease, and they become subject to senility also, being senile. So one should definitely withhold the semina, only utilizing whatever semina is necessary for having the number of children we would like to have to raise in Krishna consciousness. Actually, by developing that habit of brahmachari, even within married life, you become very powerful. Prabhupada gives the example of Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, that he gave up sex, even though he was a married man. He gave up sex life. He became strict brahmachari from his 30s onwards. He was strict brahmachari. And that brahmacharya gave him so much power, so much determination. Without firing a single shot, he was able to drive the British out of India. That one man's determination, you see. But he gave up sex and became brahmachari. So, even for some material thing, brahmachari life will make one powerful. Let's say someone wants to become a billionaire. Brahmachari life will help them make that $1 billion. But and what to speak of Krishna consciousness, that's the greatest achievement. How to drive instead of driving the British out of India, how to drive all the lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy out of my heart. That's even a bigger accomplishment than driving the British out of India. So brahmachari life, that will empower you. So we have to train our wives to cooperate. They have to be very kind and affectionate in other ways. Not that I have to have sex with my wife to show her that I love her. It's a very completely bogus idea. You see? You can show your wife you love her by not having sex. But by, you know, always preaching to her, encouraging her in the self-realization pathway of Krishna consciousness. That is real love. That is true loving affection. Show your affection in that way by preaching. You see? That is the real love and affection. When you preach to somebody, then you're giving them your true love and affection. Not this so-called sex business. Is it? So-called love and affection. Any other questions? Yeah.
You talked about leaving the association, but certain association cannot be left easily, like when we are in a family.
That's why I explained that you should learn how to give association instead of taking it. You become the leader. You set the standard for what is proper behavior.
Huh?
Who?
If the other spouse is not very inclined to Krishna consciousness.
Well, at least if they will let you practice it, then things will work out okay. If they will at least allow you to practice Krishna consciousness, to get all the meat out of the house, etc. If they will let you practice it, then you're okay, because that will eventually be purified by your association. And I know this is not, you're not speaking of yourself, nor am I speaking about particularly you. I'm just saying in general, because your wife is a very nice devotee. It's not, he's speaking on behalf of others, he's asking the question. So, if that spouse who's not a devotee will at least allow the spouse who wants to be a devotee to practice Krishna consciousness, then everything will work out in due course. Because there's nothing more wonderful than Krishna consciousness. And somebody who's actually manifesting it in their daily life, and others are associating with that person, and not being offensive towards his practice of Krishna consciousness, they will naturally take it up as well. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, Maharaj, you ask, you give that example where the kid watches Looney Tunes cartoons and everything, and he's saying, you know, how media affects the consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
So what if a person is working, like making cartoons or making animations, making movies or making music?
Oh, for a livelihood?
Yeah, for livelihood. Like, is it only?
So, is that what you're doing?
I do it part-time.
So, no, what I mean, in every endeavor, Krishna says, in every endeavor there is some kind of fault. Shayan svadharma vigana paradharmat smandushtitat svabhava niyatan karma kurvan napnot nikilvisham. So, sadosham abhasi sahajam karmakonteya sadosham abhina chajat Savaramba hidoshena dume nagnir ivavrata. As a fire is covered by smoke, every endeavor is covered by some kind of fault. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his prescribed duty, prescribed nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. So some livelihood is necessary. And if you have a certain talent and propensity in that way, then you may continue. But you should also develop on your Krishna conscious cartoons and introduce those to the market. If you can make very nice Krishna conscious cartoons, you see, and that will be some alternative to save these children from Bugs Bunny and the Roadrunner. So if you have a talent for making those cartoons, then you make very attractive Krishna conscious cartoons to attract the whole world. In that way. But if for livelihood you're depending on something like that, it's all right. But you have to offer that the results of that work, namely your income, in the service of Krishna. I mean, it's very difficult to find a job that's completely clean. Just like someone may be a travel agent. Well, it's pretty clean, just selling airline tickets. But then what kind of food comes along with the ticket? Meat. I mean, if you really want to be a purist, you'll find it very difficult to earn any kind of livelihood. If you want to look at all the ramifications of every company that you work for, it's very difficult to find a company that's completely clean. There's no karma, nothing weird that the company is promoting. So you just have to take whatever livelihood you can and offer that in the service of Krishna. And Krishna will preserve what you have and carry what you lack if you're sincerely trying to please him. Does that answer your question sufficiently? Okay. Next question. Yeah.
Maharaj, like by living in small congregation like in Canberra, like how one can keep up with maintain Krishna consciousness? Because in my experience, when I go to
all you need is one associate, really. If one is fully Krishna conscious, one good devotee association is sufficient power. Even if you have one Krishna conscious associate, that one person's association should be enough to keep you enlivened. And if you have even more, two or three families. I mean, Prabhupada didn't have anyone. You can say, well, he was Prabhupada. Yeah. But, you know, he created his own good association by preaching. He took these hippie boys and made them devotees. And then he had their good association. So it doesn't matter if you have just one devotee or two devotees. You just have to set a very good example and create that good association that you want to have. By your own preaching work and by your own example. You create that association. You should make the whole Canberra Krishna conscious, and you'll have tons of association down there, Canberra.
But since we are also affected by modes of nature, but when we go to temples and whether it makes a lot of difference.
The modes of nature can get you anywhere. Because you're just coming as a visitor, but if you were staying in this place or in that place or any place, the modes of nature will definitely start to, if you have a tendency to be within the modes, that tendency will show up wherever you are if you stay there long enough. If you go there for 2 or 3 days, then the newness of the situation is so powerful that it helps. But if you actually had to stay there for an extended period of time, you would feel the modes there too, I guarantee you. If you live in Govinda Valley and you have a trouble with the modes in Canberra and you move to Govinda Valley, you still have the same problem here. It'll show up in due course of time. So it's not the location, it's a matter of your own Krishna consciousness. As I gave the example recently, when Brahmachari, he was thinking that, I think I'd rather be married. I mean, you know, it'd be much nicer to have a Krishna conscious wife. So he took grihastha life. And then after taking grihastha life, he wrote Prabhupada very shortly, "Now, Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas." You see? And Prabhupada said, your dissatisfaction is not due to your external circumstances. It is simply due to your lack of Krishna consciousness. So if you're feeling some deficiency being in Canberra, it's not, you can't blame Canberra. It's your own lack of Krishna consciousness. So you simply have to increase your Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada is there in his books. I mean, you have Prabhupada himself as your associate. What more could you want? You have to open up Prabhupada's books and let Prabhupada speak to you and enlighten you and bless you by his Sangha. You have all facility. I have been to your Canberra twice. And there are so many nice devotees there. You have great facility there for advancing in Krishna consciousness. You simply have to realize how great opportunity you've been given and fully capitalize on it. That's all. Next question. Yes. You could do that, but some of us may find if we did that, and I'm only going to count the beads that are absolutely perfect. You may not be able to finish your rounds every day if you do them. You may be going 24 hours a day. Well, that was a bad one. Let me do that one over again. Oh, it still wasn't good enough. Let me do it again. It may be impractical to do that. Therefore, I mean, you could do that, but I wouldn't be so hard on yourself that every bead has to be absolutely perfect, or else I have to just keep chanting it until it's absolutely perfect. I would be a little, give yourself a little leniency to get your round, to get 16 rounds done and do your service. But if it's obviously really, really atrocious, yeah, you should redo it. See what I'm, you got my point? I mean, if it's really bad, yeah, you can do a bit of it. If it's not absolutely Shuddha Bhakti, if it wasn't Shuddha Nam, then I have to do it again. We're not able to, in our neophyte stage, you know, it's still a ways before we reach Shuddha Nam, the pure name. We're just, you know, we start off at Nama Parag, we go to Nama Bas, and then we go to Shuddha Nam. So, in other words, you start off 100% offensive and then 99% offensive and 98% offensive, you know, and gradually it morphs into the pure name. So in the meantime, when we're not perfect, we're making advancement, we're not perfect yet. The main thing is just try your best to get 16 quality rounds done every day. And, you know, if it's really, really atrocious and you completely went off the track, yeah. Then you can do. Yes?
It's true that Krishna consciousness is blissful, but how to make this joyful, you know? I mean, I've seen some devotees are quite serious. They're very always, you know, just talk to them, they talk about
how to make Krishna consciousness joyous?
Joyful.
You don't have to make it joyful.
It is,
no. You don't have to, because it's already joyful. If you're not tasting the joy, that means you're doing something wrong. You don't have to make Krishna consciousness a joyous process. It already is. If you're not experiencing it as a joyous process, you have to see, what am I doing wrong? What kind of aparad am I committing? Is it nam aparad, Vaishnava aparad? What am I doing which is not allowing me to taste the natural joyousness of Krishna consciousness? It is naturally joyful. So if you're not tasting the joy, you're not experiencing that, means you're doing something wrong. You have to find out what you're doing wrong. And that way, by correcting what you're doing wrong, then the natural joyousness will manifest. Krishna consciousness means 24 hours a day celebration, constantly celebrating, singing and dancing in ecstasy. You see, 24 hours a day, that is Krishna consciousness. If you're not feeling that ecstatic celebration, festive mood 24 hours a day, you're definitely doing something wrong. So you have to find, you have to approach senior devotees and find out, what am I doing wrong that I'm not tasting the nectar 24 hours a day? You have to find out what you're doing wrong. There's no question of making it joyous. It already is joyous. You understand? What is she saying?
She's saying that other devotees to whom she talks to, they are becoming very serious and they are talking very much philosophical and not very free and very joyful.
Yeah,
actually, the more serious, the more you become serious and philosophical, the deeper the ecstasy becomes. Haven't you seen pictures of Prabhupada's Prabhupada very grave and very serious? You've seen those pictures of Prabhupada? Very grave and very serious. Actually, you know, Krishna consciousness is not like hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw. It's not like that. Krishna consciousness means the more you become very serious, dead serious, then you taste the sweet, you taste very, very sweet nectar. The more you become serious, the more you become jolly. Some may be jolly, but that's jolly within the modes of nature. Some devotees are not serious, who are frivolous. They are also jolly in their frivolosity. But that is not pure jolliness. That is within the modes of nature jolliness. And that will be alternated with depression. But those who become very sober and very serious, they taste a pleasure which is very, very sublime. You see, very, very sublime. Bhayasparshesvasaktatman vindat yatmani yatsukam sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukam akshayam ashnute. They taste unlimited happiness. Those who know the heart, who no longer seek their enjoyment in the external sense gratification realm, you see, who keep themselves always concentrated on the supreme absolute truth of Krishna. So Brahma Yoga Yuktatma, you see, they are constantly fixed in transcendental meditation. They taste unlimited happiness. So you have to understand what is the real mood that brings the sweetest nectar, and that's to be very, very serious about becoming a pure devotee and getting all those rascal anarchas kicked out of your heart once and for all. Is that clear?
Because there are some devotees who are very jolly, you know? They are very advanced in philosophy, but very jolly, which makes you feel really, you know, encouraging sometimes.
Makes her feel what? Yeah.
Some people are otherwise.
Yes, that's right. We see those who are very advanced, they are the most jolly. You see, their jolliness is undisturbed by It always goes on. They're always jolly and happy in all circumstances. Because their happiness is based on their relationship with Krishna, not on the external situation. Next question. Yes? Sika, Prabhupada says that Sika is there, so the spiritual master can grab it to pull you out of this material existence. So if you don't have a Sika, you may have some difficulty going back to Godhead. The ladies already have a huge Sika, they don't have to worry. But it is a principle. Even if you're a grihastha and you're working a job, you should grow a little extra tuft in the back. Not enough to get you in trouble at the office, but actually, you know, you'd be surprised. I mean, how much you can get away with manifesting Krishna consciousness. I mean, don't the Sikhs wear their turbans to their job? You see? Why are we so shy about our insignia, you see? I remember when I was working job, I was an award-winning salesman for MCI Corporation, a long-distance company. And so one day I thought, well, I think I'll wear tilak to work today. This one day I just showed up in tilak, you know. And that day I was really fired up. I sold like crazy. And the boss came, he said, I don't know what that is on your forehead, but you must wear it every day. So I wouldn't be so shy, you know, about these things. I mean, it's really cool, you know, it's the fashion. Now in America, you can go to a barber and say, I like a temple cut. And they'll give you like this. I mean, this is really cool, you know, this is cutting edge, you know. So actually, I was traveling with one disciple who was working a job, and I was encouraging him that he could keep a Sikha. He was a little shy about doing that. This was in Bulgaria. We pulled into a gas station. The attendant came out. He had a shaved head with a big Sikha in back. And so I told my disciple, go ask him, why is he keeping the Sikha? And he said, how the knights used to keep their hair in the days of yore. The knights used to do this. So he was wearing it because it was really cool. This is what the knights used to do. They keep a shaved head with a Sikha. So actually, it's very nice. If you can get away with a shaved head and a Sikha, do it. You know? And if you can't do that, then at least keep a little tuft in the back so the spiritual master has something to grab onto to pull you out of the material existence. Next question. Yeah.
How to make sure we go back to home?
How to make sure you go back to home?
Go back to home in this lifetime.
Yeah, you have to become a pure devotee, that's all. Or, you know, if you can't become a pure devotee, then you have to be completely dedicated to the endeavor to become a pure devotee. Because Krishna can also see that. This person didn't quite make it, but they really tried hard and they were sincere about it. All right, let him come. Prabhupada has stated right there in his books, unless you're a pure devotee, you can't go back to Godhead. Because if you have any material desire, you see, then Krishna thinks, well, let me satisfy his material desire. All right. But then Prabhupada was telling the devotees in Montreal, then unless you're a completely pure devotee, you can't go back to Godhead. And the devotees were like, they were dejected. And then Prabhupada said, but if you're even 90% Krishna conscious, you can go back to Godhead. The devotees got enlivened a little bit. And then Prabhupada said 80%. And then he got up and he put his chadar over. He was walking, getting ready to leave. And he said, even if you're 70% Krishna conscious. So it's kind of like, you know, an exam, you know, in the university. I know in the U.S., 70% is a passing grade. 69% is a failing grade. 70% is passing. I don't know about Australia, but in the U.S., that was the standard when I was in school. So I think, well, that's great. I only have to be 70% Krishna conscious to go back to God. Great, I can slack off 30%. 30% of my time I can just do nonsense, you know. You know, go to the sports stadium, you know, go to the, you know, cinemas, but only 30% of the time. I'm covering myself, so I'll go back to Godhead. But wait a minute. If you aim for 70% and you don't quite make it, then you fail. Therefore, you should aim for 100%. Aim for the stars and at least you'll be able to clear the fence. So everyone should strive for pure devotional service. Please, my dear Lord Krishna, bless me that I can become your pure devotee. We should pray that way. We should be in that mood when we're chanting our japa, because we're begging for pure bhakti. Krishna, please. I've been a slave of my senses for millions and millions of lifetimes. Now I'm begging you, please, 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 Krishna, let me be your pure devotee. Please, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You see? Diligently strive for pure bhakti. And even if you don't quite make it, just like I remember one exam, I forget which exam it was, I was having some real trouble on the final exam, and I went up to the teacher. And the teacher gave me a bonus question that was worth many points. This is out of special mercy. Well, here's, I'll give you a special bonus question. If you answer this one, I'll give you this many points. And it really pushed me forward. I begged for that special mercy, and the professor gave it to me. Because they knew I was sincerely trying. I had tried my best the whole semester. So Krishna can definitely throw you some extra bonus points at the end if he sees how you were sincerely trying to become his pure devotee. So if you're sincere, then you should be chanting 16 rounds regularly without fail, following regulated principles. You should take initiation from one of the gurus in our movement. And in this way, you see, you're showing Krishna you're really serious about becoming a pure devotee. And then follow your spiritual master's orders very seriously to your best of your ability. Try to serve him with love and in a humble spirit. And in this way, Krishna will see. He'll recognize. So there's some tips. Yes.
Maharaj, in ISKCON, many initiating gurus, they are changing ashram. So what will happen to those disciples?
In ISKCON, many initiating gurus are there. So what will happen to the...
what is it?
They are changing ashram.
They are changing ashram.
They are?
They are changing the ashram. So what
the gurus are changing ashrams? Really?
They are becoming Vyastha from Sannyasi.
How many? Yeah, how many? There's not many of them. I know, I didn't do them. So if you have some doubt, see, here's the official thing on gurus in ISKCON. The GBC does not certify that somebody is a pure devotee. When they give someone the blessings to initiate disciples, all they're saying is, from all the information we have, this person has been strictly following the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness. We certify, so far as we know, he's chanting 16 rounds, he's following the four regular principles, he's been dedicated to Prabhupada's mission, you know, for many years. That's all they're really saying. Now it's up to you to find, then the rest is up to you. To find a spiritual master that you're convinced that this person can take you out of this material existence. And the rest is up to you. You study Prabhupada's books and you find a spiritual master that you're absolutely convinced this person can deliver me from the cycle of birth and death.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad my disciples don't have to worry about that one. Sometimes there, we do see there are shastric injunctions. Sometimes the guru will have difficulty. He's a very advanced devotee, but even it's even described that a Mahabhagavat can fall down if he hears Mayavadi philosophy. A spiritual master, he has taken a great risk and a great burden to accept the karma of so many disciples. It is possible that someone who is a very highly advanced transcendentalist can get into difficulty. So the question is, what do you do? What is the position of such disciples? There's an interesting purport of Srila Prabhupada in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. You may have read this. Prabhupada explains that he humbly presents himself. He says, I feel that myself to be crippled in many ways. But if one of my disciples becomes very strong in Krishna consciousness, he can take me back to Godhead. So, let's say somebody inspired you. They were a powerful preacher. They did great service for Prabhupada's mission. They inspired you in Krishna consciousness. But now somehow or other, they've become weakened by some bad association or some misfortune weakened them in their Krishna consciousness. So now the disciples should, just like Prabhupada said, the disciples should think now, how can I repay, my guru was so kind to me. Now he is in difficulty. How can I be kind to him and help him, assist him that he can become more strong in Krishna consciousness? That principle is actually there. There is such a thing. I mean, ideally, see, that there's three classes of devotees. There's Uttama Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, Kanishtha Adhikari. Prabhupada explains in the Nectar of Instruction that one can choose a guru in any three categories. One can be a guru, an Uttama Adhikari guru, Madhyama, or even Kanishtha can be a guru, Prabhupada explains. He said, but it's up to the disciple to choose someone who is an Uttama Adhikari so they will not suffer under insufficient guidance. So what if I chose someone who turned out to be a Madhyama Adhikari? Or who has difficulty. Once you've chosen a spiritual master, then you have to, unless he completely gives up Krishna consciousness, then you have to stick with him. So the best thing is to be very careful to pick as your spiritual master someone who is in the highest category of Uttama Adhikari, who is completely absorbed 24 hours a day in pushing forward this Krishna consciousness movement with all of his thoughts, all of his words, and all of his deeds. You just try your best to find an Uttama Adhikari guru who will never fall down or have difficulty like them. That's the best thing. But if you're in a situation where your guru is weakened, you may have to take siksha from other gurus who are much stronger. You may require to supplement your guru-disciple relationship with other more advanced, more powerful God-brothers of your spiritual mastery. You may be required to do them to feel strong in Krishna consciousness. Because I don't know, you're not talking about yourself, you're just talking in general, I guess. You're not initiated, are you? Okay. So there are such situations mentioned in scriptures where the guru has difficulty, the disciple remains loyal, his mood is to help the spiritual master, to repay all the mercy that he's gotten from the spiritual master. He wants to help his spiritual master. But that's not the ideal type of guru that one should have. That means he wasn't Uttama Adhikari. One should find Uttama Adhikari guru, as recommended by Prabhupada. Someone who's just completely, totally dedicated 24/7 to saving all the fallen souls of this planet. Such a person is described as Uttama Adhikari. He's totally absorbed in the Sankirtan mood of saving all the fallen conditioned souls. His whole life is totally dovetailed in that, perfectly dovetailed in that, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's the kind of guru we really need. We don't have to worry about the guru changing ashrams. Of course, if he moves up, that's all right. If he moves from married life to sannyas life, that change of ashram is not. Of course, that's good. Any other questions? Yes. The Kali Yuga?
Yes.
Okay.
Not the Kali Yuga, but in general, we see Satyuga to Treta, Treta,
right.
Dwapar and now Kali. Mm-hmm. Things are just going degraded. Now people are too anxious, envious, and all full of anxiety.
Right.
So why this is all things are like going on in this particular manner?
Why the Yugas, this is the seasons are going on, the Yugas are going on. Why are they going on like that? Why does it keep going down? Because this is the material world. In this material world, it is a natural tendency for things to degrade. It just naturally happens. The atmosphere here is centered on sense gratification. There's a powerful sense gratification atmosphere in this material world. So it's natural that the society will gradually be pulled down. Over the course of the four yugas, it's a natural progression or degression. You know, it just slides down. It starts off as 100% God consciousness in the Satya Yuga, goes to 75% God consciousness in the Treta Yuga, 50% God consciousness in the Dwapara Yuga, and 25% and diminishing, 25, 24, 23, 22, 21 in the Kali Yuga. And then there's a huge purge at the end of the Kali Yuga. And Kalki Avatar comes in with that sword and whoosh, just mass annihilation of the demons. And the big purge goes on at that time and it becomes, and the Satya Yuga comes in again. The house gets dirtier and dirtier and dirtier, and then finally a big house cleaning at the end of the Kali Yuga. And then a brand new Satya Yuga begins. And actually there are kings now waiting. Do you know that? It's described in the Bhagavatam. There are two kings, one from the Surya dynasty, the other from the Chandra dynasty. There are two Vedic kings in hiding right now, waiting for the Kali Yuga to finish, and they will resume those royal dynasties for the Satya Yuga. Those kings are right now on this planet, just biding their time, waiting for the Kali Yuga to finish so they can again reestablish those the monarchical rule, you see, Vedic monarchical rule. Any other questions? Yes?
These yugas are happening in this universe, or these similar to this setup, is there any other universe also?
These yugas are happening in this universe only, or in other universes also?
I don't recall having read anything about that, to be honest. But certainly you won't find the same atmosphere in the heavenly planet that you find here. That's a fact. Whether there's an influence, like in Brahmaloka, for example, do they feel the pinch of the yugas as we are doing here? I cannot say. I really don't know any statement from Prabhupada to say yes or no about that. But even if they are, it would certainly be in the higher planets, it would certainly be far less than what we're experiencing here. But I really can't authoritatively answer that question, because I don't recall having seen Prabhupada say anything about them. It's an interesting question. I've heard the question before. I still don't have the answer for that one. But I will be looking for it in my readings and my studies. It's a very interesting question. I appreciate your question. Okay, any other? Yes?
Gurudev, Hare Krishna mantra is so powerful, so why is it necessary of taking up the second initiation and becoming a Brahman and getting the Gayatri mantra? Why is that necessary?
Actually, that is more for our preaching. Because Brahman still has some status. That is more, it's not really necessary to go back to God, it's Brahman initiation, but it is to recognize for the sake of preaching, it recognizes those who have proven that they're able to keep their initiation vows very nicely. We give them some extra status. We recognize you are Brahmana. In other words, now you're a teacher. See, before Brahmana initiation, you're always just one of the students. But now you're second initiated. We recognize you as a priest, as you're a spiritual leader. Prabhupada says Brahman means he's the spiritual leader of the whole human society. We've recognized that you have proven that you are able to take initiation, you're able to keep the vows, you're able to steady in the principles. So now we give you, recognize you as a teacher. It's Brahman. It's recognizing you as a teacher. But actually that Harinam initiation is all you need to be delivered. But for preaching work and also for deity worship, you see. We want to see extra qualification before we let you go on the altar, that you really have it together as a devotee. And then we'll say, oh, you're a Brahman, now you can do a puja, you can give lectures. We recognize your leadership qualities and your rabbinical qualities. Any other questions? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Hare Krishna movement is coming when it's only 20 or whatever percentage. Now, what hope does the movement have if we're going?
What hope do we have?
Yes.
The good news is there is a 10,000-year period which began in the year 1486 with the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's a 10,000-year period where it's going to go up again. There will be a virtual Satya Yuga during this 10,000-year period. How high it will go, that I cannot say. Right now, we haven't really got our momentum going yet in this movement to really, push it the other direction. Of course, actually, we don't realize how powerful this movement really is. If it hadn't been for this movement, it would be much more degraded on this planet than it is now. This movement is holding back the Kali Yuga right now from coming in full force. This movement is holding back the Kali Yuga. But as our movement becomes more powerful, as our devotees become more pure in their sadhana, more pure in their chanting, etc., more pure in their relationships, etc., etc., then we'll start to see the numbers actually, the degradation will actually, the numbers will work, will start going the opposite again. There'll be 25% piety, 26%, 27%, it'll start going up. There'll be a point within this 10,000-year period when that'll start happening. I hope to see it happen while I'm alive on this planet. It seems like an unreasonable desire, but I desire it nonetheless. Being an old idealist from the 60s, we always wanted to save the world. That was our mood back in the 60s, and Prabhupada showed us how to do it. So I'm still hoping and thinking like that. I want to see it start going, I want to see a spiritual revolution manifest in every town and every village, in every high court of every country of this world. I want to see them wearing tilak. So it is going to happen within this 10,000-year period. When it will happen, that I cannot say. But it's definitely guaranteed by Krishnadas Kaviraj, the author of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sach jana dur jana pangu jadda anagana prema vanyaya budu baila jagatera jana. This Krishna consciousness movement, it is a prema tsunami. It is a tidal wave of prema. It will inundate the entire universe, drowning everyone, whether they are lame, invalid, blind, pious or impious. Everybody gets inundated in this tidal wave of Krishna prema. That's the prediction of Krishnadas Kaviraj. That means it'll go up to 100% or close to 100%. It'll be another Satya Yuga. So there's some exciting times happening on this planet. And the more we can purify our chanting and the more we can dedicate ourselves to this mission of pushing forward this Krishna consciousness movement, the faster it's going to happen. So please, all of you, become full-on spiritual revolutionaries for Prabhupada. That is my humble request. Next question. Yes.
Less intelligent, like
She is saying that Prabhupada always says that women and sudras and all are less intelligent class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She wants to clarify that point. Whether women
women are definitely less intelligent. You women are not women in that sense. You women are the cream of the crop. You women are just as intelligent as any man, even more intelligent. Some of you are more intelligent than some of us men. But in the material world, I have seen how women are definitely less intelligent. I remember when I was a high school kid, I went to a Presbyterian church, and so there was a Presbyterian affiliated college. It was canvassing all of us Presbyterian youth, high school youth, to come to that to enroll at the college. It was called Austin College. I actually did enroll there the following year. So a whole bunch of us went up. There was a special weekend on the campus. They invited all the high school kids to come. So I went with a whole car full of girls from my church. I was the only guy, the only male in a car full of girls, okay? And there was some social event on the campus, some dance that evening. They had a rock band and everybody was there socializing and dancing and the whole thing, you know. Sexually surcharged, you know, atmosphere. But these girls, for 7 hours straight, all they could talk about was boys, 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 boys. Here I was a boy. They didn't even talk to me. They just talked about boys, 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 boys. 7 hours of nothing but boys' guitar. And then I remember the next year I was enrolled on the campus and in an all-boys dorm. And what did the boys talk about? They talk about girls? No. Not very much. They would sit around and talk philosophy for hours in the dormitories. We would sit and talk philosophy. So I have personally seen that in the material world, you women are an exception. I've seen in the material world that girls are definitely not as philosophically inclined. They're not intelligent in that way. They're intelligent in other ways. But in terms of philosophical intelligence, women just aren't there. But a woman who is inclined to Krishna consciousness, she is just as intelligent as any man. And that's my experience. In fact, Guru Mataji is more intelligent than I am. I'm seeing that, practically speaking. What did she say?
She's saying it's a debatable point.
Just have a debate with Guru Mataji and you'll see someone who is a highly intelligent person. You have a little discrimination, you know, what you send out to the people. I mean, this is the age of women's liberation. You got to be a little sensitive. And just, you know, you got to be a little intelligent how you send out the email. Sometimes we men are less intelligent. We may send out an email like that, you know, unnecessarily agitate the women. And it's also stated in this age, everyone is Shudra. Kalau Shudra Sambhava. You see, the men in former ages were not dummies like us men now. There was an acumen that men had previously. We don't have now. We're all considered Shudra now. So you have to be a little sensitive how we utilize the philosophy. Everything is true. It's in Prabhupada's books. But you have to be expert how to present it according to time, place, and circumstance to not unnecessarily offend people. Any other questions? It's actually time to stop it. I'll take one more question only, and then we'll end. My year. All right. Go ahead. We are all souls throughout the whole material existence. What's the difference between you and a tree? You're the same, spiritually. But materially, there are so many differences. You can't say because we're equal spiritually that we're equal materially. That's not true. That's fanaticism. Just like now they say, well, women's liberation, the women should be able to fight in combat just like the men. But a woman, just she doesn't have a bodily frame as powerful as a man's body. In physical combat on a battlefield, a woman would be a great disadvantage. Just imagine having a physical fight between a male soldier and a female soldier. The woman would be a great disadvantage. Therefore, we don't send our women. I don't think they're doing it. They let them do supportive things. They don't send the women into combat. Formerly, there was no. The women were. They only had the. They had a separate department. Called the WACS. Yeah, the Women's Army Corps, in the U.S. Army. But now they're more incorporated into the male troops. Of course, that leads to all kinds of problems with illicit sex, and things like that too. And the women who are in the military are complaining now, we're being abused. They beg, let us into the military, equal rights. They're in there then, but we're being abused. So, now there is a, physically there is a clear difference. A woman is physically at a great disadvantage if it comes to a fight between two soldiers. She's a very disadvantaged position. So we shouldn't think that because spiritually we are equal, that materially we're equal. It's not true. Therefore, the women are meant to be protected by men. Trouble is the men are unscrupulous now. They're not qualified to give women protection. They would just exploit them. But the Vedic culture means there were pious men who gave all protection to women, gave them all respect and honor as mother, and gave them all loving care and treatment throughout the whole life without any exploitation. That was Vedic culture. So people, they can understand. They think, oh, you're lording it over the women, you know. But they don't understand the difference between lording it over and protecting. They don't understand the difference. One is based on sense gratification. The other is based on love. There's a big difference. So it's not easy. These things are very sensitive in the modern day society. Even when Prabhupada's here, the women's liberation movement had started, and the lady reporters would sometimes come, and they would challenge Prabhupada on these points. And he would always very expertly deal with them. I remember in Dallas, what did the lady say? I forget. But Prabhupada, the lady reporter was actually, she loved being with Prabhupada. She was laughing. And she became very jolly and joyful in Prabhupada's association. Even though he was making all these points, he did it in such a way that she was delighted with Prabhupada. So we have to be we have to preach in such a way that the people are not agitated, the people are enlivened. You see, that's what we have to do. We shouldn't just mindlessly, you know, spout off philosophy and agitate people's minds. Prabhupada said, if they are disturbed by your preaching, that is your nonsense. So we have to be very expert in how to present our philosophy in such a way that the whole world will be attracted to join this movement. So we're a little over time. We'll go ahead and stop here. We thank you all very much. The next session now will be at, what time? 2:30 p.m. We'll have our question and answer session. So come with your questions, write them on pieces of paper, and you can hand me a whole basket full of questions. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.